There, as promised, there were three nice samples from Alison Brown's music, and I did my job correctly dialing the phone, and I was able to find Alison Brown on the other end of it. How are you, Alison?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks so much for being available. What prompted this connection, by the way, is besides the fact that I've been a constant fan, I noticed that you were coming to Lexington, Kentucky, which is just about an hour south of me, to Willie's. And right as before we came on the air, we were talking about you may have been the first act to appear at Willie's in Lexington.
Yeah, that's right. Arthur Hancock Jr. was one of the guys who started up the listening room, I think about a year ago at Willie's, and he had been a student of mine, a banjo student of mine, when he was a Vanderbilt undergrad. So I think we might have been their inaugural music act, but it's a great room, and we're really looking forward to coming back.
They hosted down there for us here on Worldwide Bluegrass. We had a fundraiser last October, and they turned the whole place over to us, and for like 10 hours we broadcast live over the air from every kind of act that we could get in. There's some great local and national great bands came in, and we had a blast down there. I've been back there since then, but I'm looking forward. I'm going to try to sneak down to catch you Tuesday. That would be pretty cool. Before we get into
one thing I wanted to mention, it's kind of crazy, but I don't know if you have any other listeners in Scottsville, Kentucky.
Probably.
But we're actually heading up there to play this evening.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, before we get rid of you today, and I don't mean it in that sense, to stay as long as you want, we're going to talk about where you're going from here and there and to catch up, because I know you're back on tour this summer, I guess, with this Alison Brown Quartet. Before we go any further, kind of give us an idea what people might hear, and then we'll back up a little bit. While we're talking about Willie's Tuesday, talk about the band and what you think the configuration is going to be, what kind of music they're going to hear.
Okay, so on Tuesday we're going to be doing an acoustic band with, it's a couple of people that I've done a bunch of stuff with recently in different configurations. One, Andrea Zahn, who's an amazing musician. She's usually on the road with James Taylor, but she happened to be home this week, so she's going to come up and play fiddle and sing. And Ethan Ballinger, who's just an amazing young musician, lives in Nashville, and we've done some stuff with him, too. He's going to be playing guitar and mandolin. So it'll be a little bit different from the quartet, which is, you know, kind of a little bit more of a jazz focused.
Yeah, you have. And before we get out of here also, I want to ask you about your jazz influences. I've already told the listeners at the top of the hour that a little bit of your history, they know by now, if they didn't already know, that you've been in bluegrass for a long time, started out sort of in that pocket of bluegrass, and actually were the International Bluegrass Music Association Banjo Player of the Year 1991. They know a little bit about the fact that you have this wildly successful, respected record label, Compass Records, which is just amazing what you've done with that. I remember when you started it, and then you kept expanding and expanding, and now if you go to Compass Records, the list of artists is just, it's so varied, and so it's just amazing. You're covering the world with what you're picking up, and doing a great service to Irish and Celtic music and Americana music, and it's just a great asset for people who want to hear recorded music.
Well, thanks. That really means a lot, because it's a tough industry these days. So your words really mean a lot. But there's a lot of great music out there that needs to be, you know, supported, and that's what we try to do across kind of the various genres.
Yeah. Which is going to lead me to the question when we start talking about some of the jazz stuff. And at different points, we can plug in. We were off the air. I told Allison I probably have, not an exaggeration, 80 tunes in my library that I can maybe fumble and get my hands to. So if we want to talk about a certain, and I have some songs I'm going to specifically ask you about, but from the roots and the Irish, how do you get to what I hear in your jazz stuff, more of that Latin America samba, some of that stuff kind of pops up. What are your influences? And we did play one mambo banjo, but what kind of influences do you have in the jazz realm? And what are you listening to?
Well, that's a good question. You know, when I was working on material for my first solo record, which, I think you played a track from that Mambo Banjo,
yeah,
which, you know, I recorded almost 20 years ago with David Grisman producing it, and it was kind of grew out of an effort to see if I could write some of my own music. I did. I found out that it came out every which way, but not bluegrass, which was strange because I came out of bluegrass, and that's really my first musical love, is bluegrass music. But as I followed my own muse, I found that the tunes I wrote took me in a lot of different directions. I mean, directions I didn't necessarily even know that much about, like Mambo Banjo. You know, it just a melody that fit really well on the banjo. And then as a result of writing the tune, then I've kind of started to dig a little bit into other sounds, like, you know, Latin sounds, samba and mambo, and yeah. What can you do with the banjo in those grooves? And the Latin thing, especially, it's interesting that how well the banjo will fit over one of those grooves. So, I don't know, I guess really all just the result of following my own muse and trying to figure out the best way to put across the music that I end up coming up with, if that makes any sense.
It does. And as I listened, as I was getting ready from yesterday afternoon, I kind of went back and listened through again. And having heard all of your things, I just kind of wanted to get them fresh in my mind again. There's a lot of a jazz influence, obviously. And are you saying that you sort of wrote these things and then rediscovered maybe what... explain that again.
Yeah.
Let's run that by again, because I understand you wrote tunes with Grisman producing that kind of came out that way, but then did you go back and sort of discover some jazz recordings or music?
Well, you know, my dad used to listen to a lot of Joe Pass records around the house, but it's not like I had the opportunity to really study jazz, and when that kind of stuff started coming in my writing, I'm not exactly sure where it comes from. But then in an effort to be able to play it better, then I kind of went back and started listening to some of the late 50s and early 60s jazz players like Cannonball Adderley and Wes Montgomery, of course, and Joe Pass a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Just to try to, like, be a little bit better at playing my own tunes.
Well, I hear these
That's
little...
a funny thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not exactly... It's not like I studied jazz and then started writing jazz tunes. It's like, for some reason, I wrote tunes that were jazzy, and then I had to go back and try to figure out how to play them. That makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense.
It's a little
sense.
Odd. But.
No, it makes perfect sense. Everybody comes at it their own way, and I hear these little phrases, in one of the tunes, I almost hear I'm a big Sonny Rollins fan. I hear a little bit of a St. Thomas, kind of that Caribbean thing in one of the inner Pelican
Bay. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
is that what it
yep.
is?
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
So you didn't know you're going to be calling into a bluegrass show and talking about Sonny Rollins and St. Thomas, did you?
Well, you know, knowing that I was talking to you, I'm not.
But it's so great. You have all these little, and we're talking mostly, I guess, at this point about the Alison Brown Quartet isn't just because if it isn't just in that genre, which I hate classifying music, and probably you do too, but because you will hear tunes on there that'll fit right into what a bluegrass audience would listen to. But that Alison Brown Quartet, I meant to say earlier, that's where you hear a lot of the jazz influence, in my opinion. It's a mellower kind of a more involved structure. And I was listening to all that again, and I thought, man, it's just such, no wonder I liked it the first time through. It just fit right exactly what I want to hear.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, it definitely has one big foot planted in bluegrass music. But then, you know, the quartet, what distinguishes that is that it's basically, you know, piano, bass, and drums, and banjo. So
yeah.
It's sort of like a jazz rhythm section. Even though it's not a jazz, it you know, if when we play at a jazz festival, people come up to us and they're like, I didn't know I loved bluegrass music so much. And when we play at a bluegrass festival, people are like,
so that's jazz.
I didn't know I liked jazz. So it definitely has a foot in both worlds, but a home in neither one.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because Eric Weisberg has been on the show, and he's very much an advocate of the fact that the jazz lines and the bluegrass lines get very crossed, and they're very similar at certain levels of performance, and he actually goes and breaks down what instrument plays what part in the old jazz bands versus what you might think of as a bluegrass quartet or you know, a quintet. Now so you're right there with I don't know why it happens. It's very attractive to me, but obviously that's what you're doing and how your playing comes out too, which is just wonderful.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're an instrumentalist, I mean, the interesting thing about bluegrass and jazz is there's traditions for instrumentalists to be solo artists, and that's pretty unique. That's unusual. It's probably unheard of in pop music. I mean, there have been moments when something like that's kind of happened a little bit, but you know, it's really bluegrass and jazz have that in common, and I think that's one reason why so many people who are instrumentalists in bluegrass music end up reaching into jazz.
Well, it's the improvisation. It's not always the same musical scales, but it's at some point you're out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, what we do at the quartet, it's not very far out there. It's very song form oriented. I've always really liked melodies that you could take away with you as a listener, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's not fusion jazz. It's more song form melodic And it's jazzy just because it goes a little bit beyond sort of the 1-4-5 and 2-6.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, chord changes that you'd find in bluegrass music.
Right. Right. I have to say, the first time I saw you live, and I've seen you since then, but the first time that I saw you live, you were Ricky Skaggs. Let's go back a ways. Ricky Skaggs wanted to get back out of country music and back into bluegrass music, and his grand scheme was, my first step back on stage would be to get the New South back together with Jerry Douglas and J.D. and all those guys. And the mm-hmm. opening act for the very first time that show appeared on stage was at that time Alison Krauss in Union Station. It was you, Tim Stafford, I want to say, I think Adam Steffi, and I cannot remember the bass player.
Yeah, Barry Bales.
It was Barry Bales, yes, even back that long mm-hmm. ago. Yeah, that's the first time I saw you live, and of course I went there.
Was that in Cincinnati? Or?
The very first one was in Cincinnati, yeah.
Yeah, I remember those shows. We did 4 or 5 of those shows, which mm-hmm. was, you know, amazing for all of us and Allison's band.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you, because right there you're opening up, and somewhere back there was the first time that legendary New South band came back together. So JD's there somewhere nearby, and the opening act comes out, and I had not heard of Union Station by that point. I was very impressed with everybody in the band and went finding the music, but it was a big audience because it was under a roof. It was at a venue called Riverbend in Cincinnati, which all the big rock bands were coming to back in those days. And so out of the box is this kind of the new band that comes out. And oh, Nashville Bluegrass was banned. Ralph Stanley was there. Ricky Skaggs, of course, was there also. And there were several other great bands. But it not that you would be intimidated at all. I don't think that you should have been. But that's a nice place to step out. that's a nice bit of exposure.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure that we noticed the other people that we were sharing the stage with more than we did the venue. And, you know, I remember in those, like, you know, when Allison started getting opportunities to play sheds like that, the challenge of how you take a bluegrass band that's a 100% acoustic band and move into an arena like that and be able to hear yourself. You know, that's a big transition for a band to make.
Oh, yeah, and it's a huge stage.
Yeah, it's a big stage, and, you know, we were just... I don't think we were even traveling with the sound person, so we would have been relying on house sound and, you know, and 100% acoustic instruments, maybe a DI on the bass, I can't remember, but, you know, and I'm sure we were thinking more about the fact that we were sharing the stage with our heroes than we were about the fact that there were, whatever, 1,500 people in the audience. But
well,
it was very cool. We did, like I said, we did 4 or 5 shows that,
mm-hmm.
that tour. That
It was the Ricky Skaggs Pickin' Party.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what he called it. And the only reason I know that for sure is I still have the shirt.
or I would have
forgotten that. All right, so let's we go back to there in 91 then, and that was in late what, 80s, early 90s. You were with Alison Krauss in Union Station, and then you were voted Banjo Player of the Year for IBMA, and everybody out there probably knows that's a pretty big deal, International Bluegrass Music Association. And
it was a smaller deal back then, but it was no less an honor.
Well, I mean, there have always been great musicians playing banjos and bluegrass, and for you to be singled out then, now, or whenever is just amazing. And you made this jump to what made you decide that I need to start a record label? Because as you said, it's a difficult job.
Mm-hmm. You know, kind of equal parts ignorance and the idea that it's made all the sense in the world for musicians to run a record label. And, you know, it was really on the cusp of the whole DIY, you know, do-it-yourself artist label thing. And we really started our label because we felt Gary West, who is the co-founder of the label and now my husband, he has been for a long time. But we really thought, you know, the combination of artists being out on the road and discovering new music and then actually bringing their knowledge of music to running the company would be unique and something that would be welcomed, you know, in the roots music world. But honestly, we didn't really know how to do it. We just thought it was a good idea. And I had a little bit of a business background and kind of enough to get us going. And we just sort of, well, we just sort of ran with it. And we look up and now it's 20 years later and we have kind of amassed a pretty large catalog of music, some of it through catalog acquisitions and other, you know, just through Funding and Licensing Masters on the Compass imprint.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's what I, you know, probably spend a lion's share of my time most of the time these days.
Well, and I knew that, and that's why I appreciate so much you're available on a Saturday. I'm sure you have many things to do because not only are you performing, you're running a record label. And how many artists? I mean, when I go on, I remember when you purchased Green Linnet. You know, that whole catalog, and that was a big bump up as far as the music you were. And that was more of an Irish, for people listening, kind of a Celtic. I guess it was probably exactly that, right? I mean,
I'd say that probably the largest Celtic catalog in the world, and certainly the largest in the United States.
Yeah.
So that gave us, you know, that was a real, as a company that had been in the Irish music business for 20 years. And we had started to work with a lot of those artists on Compass Records for various reasons. So then we went out and acquired their back catalogs and it kind of gave us even more of a reach into the Celtic world than we already had. So, yeah, that really, you know, kind of made us probably the largest catalog for, we think, possibly in the world for Celtic music, which is not something we set out to do, but, you know, music, Celtic music, all these root genres, they're all really... They're all just, you know, cousins anyhow.
So. Yeah, sure. It all comes from Scotland, Ireland, England, and then the mountains and everything like that. So that connection is pretty strong there. But you have, I mean, how many, can you even estimate how many artists you have signed? I look at you now have to actually go through folks, and we're talking to Allison Brown here and talking about her label, Compass Records. When you go there, you actually have to go through the alphabet to see all the ones. You can just notice, say, here's the artist. You got to go through the A's and the B's. How many artists do you think you have signed up right now?
Well, I don't know, actually. We've probably got about 600 records out across, you know, Compass, Greenland, and Mulligan Records, and a couple of other smaller imprints. But, you know, at any given time, maybe 20 or fewer actively touring. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, so, sure.
You know, in terms of new releases, we've probably done maybe 10 or 12 new releases this year, and maybe 8 of those are artists that are out there actively touring.
Right.
And then we've got other artists, you know, whose records came out in the past couple of years who are actively touring. So even though there's 600 records, there's not 600 people calling once a week to see how their record's doing.
Right, I got you. But it's a nice catalog, and I invite people to check out CompassRecords.com, the website, and you will just be amazed at what has slowly, as you say, you thought you wanted to do it, you didn't really know how to do it, not that you were ignorant of business, because you certainly were not, but from what it's grown to, it's a major player in music and recordings, and it's just a great resource.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that, and folks should go check out the website, because I'm pretty sure we have a Peter Rowan contest going right now. I know that we do. Peter Rowan has a new record called The Old School that I hope you've got a copy of.
I've got it. I've got it. I'm on your list, and I'm working hard to get Peter on the show also. So we'll.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell him he needs to give you a call.
You tell him to do
it. But anyhow, we've got a contest that if your listeners go to the website, they'll see it. And it involves a whole bunch of cool prizes and Peter Rowan's records. Go check that out.
Well, they can do that, and on Facebook, by the way, when I found out yesterday that I could fit you in this afternoon, and I know that you've got a million things going on. Of course, I start publicity the best way I can, which is immediately tell everybody on Facebook and get them up to speed, and tell them to go to that website, and the fact that you're going to be in Lexington on Tuesday. And I post there's a lot of nice videos of stuff that you've played so they can get a nice sample of what you've been up to. I know what I wanted to ask you about. You used to play with the quartet maybe more than any other, and maybe I'm just thinking long, long time ago, an Electric Neckville banjo. Is that still in the play?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, after 9/11, it became so much harder to travel with a lot of stuff that we stopped carrying it with us as much. So the short answer to that is that's not something we really mess with that much, although I just got a new Neckville steel string electric that's really great, and I used it actually with the Indigo Girls a couple months ago at the Rhine, and it was really fun to play. So I could see, you know, sticking that in the car.
Yeah. Well, and Tom Neckville, we're in works on getting Tom on to talk about the wonderful stuff he does with banjos, and I remember seeing him at IBMA and stuff, and it's a whole different concept. And Tom is sometime in the next month or so, we're going to get Tom on to talk about all the innovations that he's done for banjos. But I happen to remember that I used to see you with that. Was it a Meteor, the Necro Meteor, the electric?
Yeah. Well, the banjo that he built for me was unique because it had nylon strings.
That's
but it
right.
basically was kind of a prototype Meteor. I have one that actually has the cutaway on the top instead of the bottom. I think he was really just starting to experiment with that design. But it's a cool instrument for sure.
I think it has, from my limited ability, and I'm a very pedestrian banjo player, but when I play it, it sounds amplified more like an acoustic banjo than any other banjo that I hear electrified. You know what I mean?
I agree. I mean, you know, it doesn't have the plunkiness of a regular banjo, but the tone is really nice.
Yeah.
And in some situations, you know, I think you'd be probably better served trying to get your sound across that way.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel the same as playing an acoustic, though. I love the pull of the, you know, the head and the tension on the strings and everything. I mean, just the physical part of playing banjo and acoustic banjo is great.
Yeah. Hey, are there any tunes? I've got like 80 of them up here. Any of them you can think of? I know there's one that I would like to play. First of all, there's one that I want to ask you about, and song titles always amuse me, and you're very prolific at writing really unique melodies. That's just my opinion, but song titles are always interesting. I know they probably mean next to nothing to the author of the songs, but you have one tune that in parenthetically states, "I'm naked and then it says, "going to Glasgow." And I just want to know, I don't need to play that song, but I want to know why, where did that title come from?
Oh, well, that song was inspired by our many trips to the Celtic Connection Festival in Glasgow, Scotland, and we wanted to put together a tune that was a medley of tunes, the way the Irish bands have sets of tunes and the Scottish bands do sets of tunes. So we put together that set, and then it just seemed like a whimsical title. But we were heading to Glasgow, so we decided to call it that.
All right. Well, I mean, I didn't think it was anything scandalous. I just was amused as I was looking through the things as to, you know, some people name them about the first thing they see after they write a tune, and I thought, well, I figured it had to do with being in Glasgow, but I couldn't quite figure the connection. Do you have a second?
You're right.
Yeah, do you have a second for me to play a tune while you're still here, and then
Why don't we pick a tune together, and then I've got to run because I have to start driving to Scottsdale.
Oh, okay. Well, we can go with a jazzier tune if you want. We can go with something you think more in the lines of bluegrass. Really, I love it all, and I will tell you this much: the audience that listens to this program. They've heard Ryan Cavanaugh, they've heard Eric Weisberg, they hear Sonny Osborne. They're used to the full gambit of what's available through bluegrass artists such as yourself. So I like Spider-Man theme because, you know, there's a big movies about that. I like, you know, I like G-Bop. I like all kinds. I've written down 5 or 6 tunes. And Wolfman. Wolfman, you're playing guitar on. Or Wolf Moon.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't read my
gosh,
handwriting.
I did play some guitar on that.
Yeah, you did.
Well, at first I was going to say, how about if we play, you know, Magnificent Seven or Summer Running? I love both of those tunes, the way the guys played on it.
Okay.
I know that my daughter Hannah is listening to the show today on her iPad.
Oh, good. Hi, Hannah.
But I was going to say, maybe we could send a song out to Hannah. It's a song from Stolen Moments, and it's called Musette for a Palindrome.
Oh, sure.
And I wrote it for her when I was pregnant with her. And I knew that I wanted to name her Hannah, so that's the palindrome.
That's right. Okay, it's right here. I got it right under this, under my cursor right now. So let's play that. Will you be able to stick around till it's finished, and then we can come back and say goodbye and tidy up some things?
Sure, that'll be perfect.
All right, this will be Musette for Palindrome, which you just heard Allison Brown state. She wrote it for her daughter Hannah, which is a palindrome. So that's pretty cool. Let's listen to that, and we'll be right back with Allison Brown on Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass. I'm having fun. That was a nice choice. That was Allison Brown's Musing for a Palindrome, written for her daughter Hannah. And Allison, I know you're so busy. I'm so happy that you were able to stop by for some time today. And I want to make sure that we get back over where you're going from now. I can hear you packing as we're talking. And you're heading out for where tonight?
Well, we're heading up to Scottsville, Kentucky to play at Arts on Main. And I believe it's a free show, so hopefully any folks in the area looking for something to do on Saturday night will come out and see us.
Oh, you can't beat that price, and you get to hear Allison Brown and her, and the band she described earlier, and you will enjoy it. And then I know for a fact Tuesday you're going to be in Lexington at Willie's. We've talked about that. That's an 8 o'clock start, I believe.
And, I think that's right.
That'd be
a 7 o'clock start.
Well,
7 or 8, I can't remember.
One of those two. Get down there after dinner, and everybody will be fine. And I've been there before. Like I said, we did a 10-hour fundraiser from there last October for the station, and it's just a great place to hang out. Where else do you know for certain you're going to be after Tuesday, just so we can keep up with where you are?
Oh, well, I'll be in the studio a bunch, and then we're heading out west in July. We're going to be at the California World Music Festival in July, the Mendocino Music Festival, and we're playing at the Durango Strings in the Mountains. Music in the Mountains.
Yeah.
And I'll be teaching at the Rocky Grass Academy this year.
Oh, that'll be good.
So anybody who wants to come have a great week in Lyons, Colorado, should be really fun.
That sounds great, and then you can learn how to play just like Allison just by going to one of her classes.
That's right. I'll do the best I can.
Allison Brown, I have enjoyed this so much. I know you're busy as heck, and I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for dropping by, and I would like the opportunity to do this again. We could do an hour on just the quartet music that you've done. Let's plan on doing this again sometime in the future, and we'll cover some more material. How's that sound?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Just holler at me anytime, and yeah, thanks for mentioning Compass Records to your listeners, and please, folks, go check out the website and check out that Peter Rowan contest. We've got some great prizes.
That's fun. And if you go on the website, you can see Peter as a dog.
Yes, that's right.
There's a video of him.
Drop the Bone. Our staff created that video. They had a great time bringing their dogs into the office and making that happen. So
that's worth
checking out the website.
Oh, that's for no other reason alone. That's worth it. Just to see Peter without his hat on. He looks like a dog, funny. It's fine to say.
Exactly. It's weird how that works.
All right, Allison, I'll let you get back to packing and getting on the road. And thanks so much, Allison Brown. And in about 15 minutes, Allison, I'll say goodbye to you and just keep talking to the folks, okay?
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you so much, and look forward to seeing you on Tuesday.
Thank you. Bye.